we move into this moment. There are, what, 11,000 members of the Academy of Motion Picture who will be voting on short and long documentaries, all the different films. This terrible, really, moment for you, but also trying to redeem it somehow. Your final thoughts.
I just hope that this film draws attention to the work that my brother did. You know, Brent cared about people caught in the middle of these conflicts around the world. And, you know, as we enter another war, I think about all the civilians that are going to be hurt and impacted. I think about the soldiers that are going to be killed and their families. And I hope Brent's work and the work of all the fallen journalists helps people pause for a minute and think about the impact that these wars will have.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us, Craig Renaud, director and producer of Armed Only with a Camera, The Life and Death of Brent Renaud, about his brother Brent, killed 4 years ago this month in Ukraine. The film's been nominated for an Oscar for Best Documentary Short. Voting for the Oscars by members of the Academy ends tonight. That does it for our show. To see the full interviews we've done over the years with Craig, with Brent, with all the Oscar-nominated filmmakers, you can go to democracynow.org. On Saturday, I'll be in Savannah, Georgia, at the Hindsight Film Festival for a screening of the award-winning documentary Steal the Story, Please, about the 30 years of Democracy Now! I look forward to seeing folks in Savannah, Georgia on Saturday night at 7. Check our website at democracynow.org for details. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Tarasena, Nicole Salazar, Charina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Safwat Nizal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Karl Marxer, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through our public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is Jacqueline Keeler, and you are listening to Ipo with Unum here on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. And so today we are looking, I mean, last week I did two shows on, State of the Union, was it? And it seems like a long time ago, actually, now. And today we have a war. I mean, every round war has happened in the past 6 days. And it's quite extraordinary. And so we are going to talk about that today. This is a live call-in show, so please do call in. The number is 503-231-8187. Basically we have an illegal war in Iran. And, of course, the Senate yesterday refused to vote on it. I think that the Houses might do that today. This is what the Pentagon has dubbed Operation Epic Fury. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it is not ridiculous on the ground, of course. They bombed the school of girls. It's just quite horrific what's happening. And so this is a joint U.S.-Israeli campaign. And this is there's a lot of discussion about, has the United States become sort of a a puppet for Israel, you know, and it actually did come up recently. Let's play the audio of the U.S. Senator and the anti-war Marine getting his hand broken, I guess his whole arm broken, protesting.
Out! No one wants to fight for Israel!
His hand! Oh! His hand!
Sir. Let go of your hand. Let go of the door.
The senator broke his hand. A sitting U.S. senator just broke the hand of a Marine.
Sir.
Control your Senate.
I'm stuck in the door. Okay, sir.
A U.S. senator just broke the hand of a Marine.
Hand stuck.
A U.S. senator just broke the hand of a Marine. You're a coward.
Yeah, so that was actually coming. This is during the Senate Powers War Powers Resolution vote on Wednesday. That was where they voted not to do anything. It wasn't actually a vote on the illegal war that was never approved by Congress, which it should be. And so that was Brian McGinnis, who is a firefighter, Marine veteran. He is also a candidate for the Green Party for the Senate in North Carolina. And yes, he came in full uniform, and he can be seen in this video being grabbed by Republican Senator Tim Sheehy, right? Tim Sheehy he is a Republican, and he is a U.S. Senator from Montana. And he's had some his own, I think you might be able to hear someone saying that to him in this audio, which was that there was some discrepancies in his discharge from the Navy Ready Reserve. And so, so there's some question over his service and the nature of his discharge. And so he helped these Capitol Police tackle this man. The man's hand got stuck in the door jamb. So I think that his arm was actually broken, and he has actually been charged with arrest, I think. And so that's been going on there. His arm was broken, and even with his injuries, he has been criminally charged with assault on a police officer and resisting arrest. So that's been going on there. And you could hear that, you know, he opened his, you can hear him saying that no one wants to fight for Israel, right? So this has been a big issue and discussion going on about the nature of, how did this war get started, right? Let's listen to President Trump giving an update. We've been looking at this since Saturday morning, February 28th. They did a series of decapitation strikes. United States and Israel forces targeted the heart of Tehran. And then, of course, the Supreme Leader, who is like the Pope for the Shia Muslim, is the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, was killed in those initial hours. And from what I understand about Shia Islam is that he'd be regarded as a martyr. And I understand that members of his family, he actually chose not to seek safety, and he was dying of cancer, and he's an 80-some-year-old man, and I think his daughter and his grandchildren stayed with him, and they were also killed. And so I think this is, I don't know if this is the call to jihad or whether it will really be what, Netanyahu and Trump think is a decapitation of an evil leader, right? Several high-ranking members of the clerical regime and the IRGC were eliminated or killed. Let's listen to Trump's take on what's happening. This was a few days ago, but I think it's a good overview.
Any questions, please?
Mr. President, did Israel force your hand to launch these strikes against Iran? Did Netanyahu pull the United States
No, I might have forced their hand. You see, we were having negotiations with these lunatics, and it was my opinion that they were going to attack first. They were going to attack. If we didn't do it, they were going to attack first. I felt strongly about that. And we have great negotiators, great people, people that do this very successfully and have done it all their lives very successful. And based on the way the negotiation was going, I think they were going to attack first. And I didn't want that to happen. So if anything, I might have forced Israel's hand. But Israel was ready and we were ready. And we've had a very, very powerful impact because virtually everything they have has been knocked out now. Their missile count is going way down. Amazingly, they're hitting countries that were, you know, let's call them neutral, right? They lived together for a long time. I think they were surprised. I was surprised. I think it, and now those countries are all fighting against them and fighting strongly against them. Also hitting only civilian places, hotels and apartment buildings, and we're hitting them where it is much more appropriate. We're hitting them very hard. And the big scale hitting goes now. They no longer have air protection. They no longer have any detection facilities at all left. And so they're gonna be in for a lot of hurt. These are bad people. These are people that killed, I guess it's 35,000, it's coming out, 35,000 over the last 3 weeks, protesters, 35,000 violently killed. So these are bad people, and the leader of the pack is gone. And as you know, 49 people were taken out in the first hit, and I guess there was another hit today on the new leadership, and it looks like that was pretty substantial also. So they're getting hit very hard, and we'll see what happens. A lot of people are coming forward. A lot of the people you would least suspect want to quit. They want to have immunity. They're asking for immunity. And probably at some point they'll be dropping, as you would say, laying down their guns. We'll see what happens. In the meantime, we're just continuing to go forward. Our military is the number one in the world by far.
Do you have someone in mind right now? Because you said all the people you did have in mind have been taken out. What do you
Well, most of the people we had in mind are dead. So, you know, we had some in mind from that group that is dead. And now we have another group. They may be dead also. Based on reports, all of the fired people, we don't believe in that. So we'll see what happens, but first we have to finish off the military. And now Spain actually said that we can't use their bases, and that's all right, we could use their base if we want, we could just fly in and use it. Nobody's gonna tell us not to use it, but we don't have to. But they were unfriendly, and so I told him we don't want to. Spain has absolutely nothing that we need other than great people. They have great people, but they don't have great leadership. And as you know, they were the only country that in NATO would not agree to go up to 5%. I don't think they would have agreed to go up to anything. They wanted to keep it at 2%, and they don't pay the 2%. So we're going to cut off all trade with Spain. We don't want anything to do with Spain.
That was Trump speaking a few days ago, giving an update. I think he was sitting with German Chancellor Scholz. So you can hear him say that they're willing to just go use Spain's, force without, it's just crazy. And actually cutting off Spain from any trade, once again, these trade. And then, of course, decapitation. Issue. It seems to be leading to a potential power vacuum if all the people that they originally hoped would take over are gone, killed, and also the notion that only the Iran is killing all these innocent people. And of course, one of the first strikes that the U.S. Israel engaged in was on a girls' school, and they estimate Iranian health officials and state media say as many as 175 people were killed, most of them schoolgirls between the ages of 7 and 12 years old. And so that's been part of it as well. The Yeah, but of course Rubio doesn't seem to be on the same page as Trump. I think he backtracked from these statements. But let's listen to what Rubio said brought the U.S. into the war.
So today, Marco Rubio was here, where he told the public that the so-called imminent threat that prompted the U.S. to launch this war in the first place was because they knew the Israeli military was going to attack Iran, which would then prompt, according to Marco Rubio, Iran to respond by attacking U.S. bases as retaliation. And so, to preempt all of that, Marco Rubio is suggesting, the U.S. launched its strikes with Israel on Iran first. In other words, what Marco Rubio is saying, essentially, is that Israeli foreign policy is dictating U.S. foreign policy and what your tax dollars, as an American, are going towards. Republicans largely didn't want to answer what they thought about Marco Rubio's justification. Some of them avoided the question, some of them would repeat this idea that there was just this imminent threat that Iran was posing, even though intelligence and reporting shows that not to be the case. In fact, as we know, Iran was trying to negotiate a deal with the Trump administration. Instead, the Trump administration responded by launching a war with Israel on Iran. Democrats I spoke with, regardless of their previous positions on Israel and Palestine, were largely pretty surprised and shocked by Marco Rubio's comments. All of them seemed to think that it was a joke, really, to suggest that Israeli foreign policy should dictate U.S. foreign policy. There was a lot of consensus around that from Democrats. Amid all of this, Donald Trump posted on his Truth Social account that we should all watch out for Benjamin Netanyahu's interview on Fox News today. It's unclear why the U.S. president seems to be serving as a communications secretary for the Israeli prime minister.
And you hear there that Rubio admits that Israel pulled the U.S. into this war, and that there was actually no imminent threat. I know it was a bit, I think the sound wasn't very good, but what he was saying, there was no actual imminent threat, and Israel is what really brought the U.S. into the war. And of course, you heard at the end there, Trump was promoting Netanyahu's Fox interview. Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. We have a caller. Hi, Santiago. You're on TV. Good morning.
Good morning. I think one thing that's like a lot of people are missing from the discussion that I've really heard is that basically, like, there's convergent interest in the idea between Israel and the United States, which makes it easy to pull them into the war, is to talk about the oil and being able to control the oil. But the difference is, and I think it speaks to what Trump had said about all the people they had chosen as leaders ended up getting killed in that first strike, is because at the end of the day, the United States wants to broker a deal essentially to have a more pliant and more obsequious Iran that's open to Western interests, whereas Israel wants Iran obliterated. They want the gazification, if you will, of Iran. And I think that's going to run counter to what the U.S. essentially wants to do. And I think it's going to blow up in the face of all of these Republicans. Cause I mean, and then you could also argue too, that this is holy war for Christian Zionists, which is another reason why it's such a convergent interest with Israel, is that all these kooky, and I'm talking like Christian Zionists, whether you're talking about Republicans or Democrats, these are people who want to see the return of the biblical Israel, which is from the Euphrates to I can't remember where, but it's in the Bible. But they want to return all the Jewish people to Israel to initiate the second coming, where, two-thirds of the Jewish people will be burned up instantly and the other third will convert to Christianity. So, I mean, there's a whole lot of insanity with this, but it's just, and I think the other thing, too, is that, because here's the thing, like, Democrats are against this on procedural grounds, because ultimately Democrats are interested in regime change, too. They want it to look competent. This looks absolutely insane because it is, but they want regime change. They just want competent regime change. And the thing is that the reason why the Ayatollah came into power in the first place is because America, with Britain's help, or I don't know if it was the other way around, but essentially they deposed Mossadegh in 52 or 53. He was a democratically elected leader, but he went and nationalized Iranian oil and cut the white boys out, and they didn't like it. So they went in and deposed him, brought the Shah back into power. Then the Shah got ran out and the Ayatollah came back. So the fact that, like, you know, there's so many people, both liberals and conservatives, that either are missing that point or refuse to discuss that point before they start sending people in to go and die for Israel. There's just so many moving parts to this. And essentially, like, the leadership is boiling it down to Ayatollah bad, America good, actually.
Hmm. Yeah, I think disgusting. That's really true.
Yeah.
I mean, the next clip I'm going to play is about, U.S. military commanders, basically, basically telling folks, I'll play that in a little bit, but telling service members that the Iran war is biblically sanctioned to bring Armageddon, right? And that's these sorts of strange ideas, yet they are playing out, I think, in the background. I mean, everyone knows that for years the evangelicals in the United States have been really supporting Israel because they want to bring about the second coming of Jesus Christ, right? Requires that the Temple of Solomon be rebuilt, you know, and the Jews return to Israel. And so I saw this very interesting video called Game 39, the U.S. Iran War, by Professor Zhang. He's kind of a controversial figure he's a Canadian Chinese. He went back and he teaches in Beijing. But he did a whole kind of analysis of that, those sort of stories that are told and how they, you know, kind of, they can work together synergistically to, you know, both parties want this, right? They both want, you know, Israel wants this, and of course the evangelicals want this. And the fact that our own military leaders are saying this, and this, you know, Trump has, of course, been getting rid of military leaders, you know, the U.S. military leaders that oppose him or are on board completely. So now we have these really folks who really believe in Armageddon who are now leading our troops. Mm-hmm. It is quite crazy. And then, you know, I could definitely see the plan, which, you know, for is to break up Iran, you know, into these ethnic minority groups, Southern Azerbaijan, Kurdistan, all the, you know, and leave Persia isolated in the middle, you know, that part of Iran, which is, and then leave it sort of no longer a player, right, anymore in any way. It is the only Shia state, ruled country in the world, right? The rest are all Sunni. So it is isolated that way as well. There are, you know, a lot of places I think looking at the Gulf countries, you know, the Gulf coastal countries, the GCC, and just the role, of course, you know, this has such a huge how it will play out as far as the oil and as far as the U.S. involvement with the GCC states, you know, as far as providing military protection and, you know, just all the hundreds, the billions of dollars of U.S. tax dollars that goes into defending these authoritarian states and oil, you know, folks and all the money that these folks in the Gulf area, all the money that these autocratic leaders put into into Wall Street, right? Propping up Wall Street.
Yeah.
You know, and the dependence of so much of the world on the oil that actually goes through the Strait of Hormuz, right? I think 20% of the oil in the world goes through there. And a lot of countries like Japan are really quite quite dependent on it, you know? And they can actually, I think Japan depends on, 75% of their oil. India, 60%.
It's a huge thing. I mean, it's gonna skyrocket everybody's prices for oil. It's insane. But this is the cause. You know, they want to play these games, but it shows that they're perfectly willing to sacrifice their citizens. Talking about America, I mean, shoot, even Israel too, willing to sacrifice their citizens for a colonial expansion. I'm going to say one more thing and then I'll get out of the way. But, I heard this saying yesterday. It said an egg cracked from the outside is food. An egg cracked from within is new life. We as Americans need to stop thinking that we need to intervene in everybody else's business. Because here's the thing, like the Ayatollah, as much as as terrible and as bad as they are to a lot of people, the fact of the matter is that that's the leadership of that country. And if the people want to overthrow them, they're going to do it regardless of how many people get punished or killed or murdered or whatever, because, you know, it's going to happen. Revolution is just a part of life. And the fact that, like, America thinks that, you know, that America and a lot of Americans think that they have the right to go in there and depose leaders is absolutely disgusting. It's like, you know, a fella Kuti said once, he said, you know, if you want to free the world, then free Britain and free the United States, because if we're free of capitalism, then everybody else is freed as a consequence. So if we really want to do something, we need to start here. We need to stop messing with other people's governments, because, you know, the American government has had just as many Hitlers in it as, you know, as any other fascist state. I mean, America is a fascist state. We need to stop pretending that Western democracy is somehow special in the world when it literally isn't. So anyway, thank you for letting me talk, Jacqueline. I appreciate you.
Yeah, always good to hear from you, Santiago. Yeah, once again, the number here is 503-231-8187. Please do call in. We are discussing the Iran war and where it's at right now. I want to play next the audio that I mentioned earlier about what military leaders are telling service members about this war.
We have some news right now. Military service members are complaining that some troops have been told that bombing Iran and going to war was all part of, quote, God's divine plan. So one of the crazier stories you'll hear today was first reported by John Larson, an independent journalist, and has since been reported on by the Huffington Post and others. The Military Religious Freedom Foundation has received a litany of complaints about religious ideology seeping into military orders. This has happened since the United States went to war with Iran. According to the president and founder of MRFF, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, he says that essentially after the bombing began, service members started calling this foundation and letting them know that commanders were trying to tell them, quote, don't worry, it's all part of God's plan. One of the commanders allegedly cited the Book of Revelation, the section specifically related to the Armageddon and the, quote, imminent return of Jesus Christ. And a non-commissioned officer said that the messaging is actively destroying military morale and unit cohesion.
That was Aaron Tarnas reporting on that, and he probably stopped back. He's very good update on things. And it's insane. I mean, really, the fact that we have our military members telling service members of things that, you know, really seem like very fringe ideas. I mean, obviously, you know, the evangelicals have been a very powerful political group in the United States for decades, but their ideas were always seen as fringe, not normal, not part of the mainstream. And yet, here we are conducting, throwing billions of dollars at this war, probably going into trillions if it continues, to basically make this this idea of, this Armageddon come about. And it's just crazy. You know, I think, we look at, talk about the Shia state, the Shia Islam state, that, you know, the emphasis on martyrdom and these sorts of acts that Israel and the United States are doing, you know, could lead to jihad, right? And the idea that, you know, just cutting off the head of a leader doesn't really do a lot when you have such an extensive, decentralized command structure in that country. And also, you know, the fact that they're attacking Tehran, where most of the educated, less religious people live, right? They're not attacking the surrounding rural areas where the true believers. I mean, it's just a completely ridiculous and really tragic thing that's going on there. And but the, I mean, there are, it's just nuts. And I think, do we want to be, I mean, right now, you know, the Senate has abdicated doing anything about this, right? They've abdicated their constitutional role to stop this, right? And what do you feel should be done if Congress as a whole, you know, the House and the Senate, will not do anything about this? What can Americans do ourselves? So I'm going to give a number here. It's 503-231-8187. And, yeah, just let me know what you think of the situation. And, oh, we have another caller. Hi, Kansas. Good morning.
Hi there. Yeah, or Congress as a half, or Congress as a half, maybe. That's what I'm focusing on. We have this term, commander in chief. But isn't it supposed to be commander in Congress?
Yeah, Congress is.
Yeah, look at the term. I mean, we've been using it for decades, yeah. And so it's been planted there. The only president, we have a surgeon general, but I never heard of a president general. There was a President Eisenhower. He was a general before being president. So well, here we go. So, but the Congress voted on the War Powers Act. So they're voting on whether or not to do the Constitution. So everyone who voted against it is voted against the Constitution. Yes,
that's true.
Yeah, it's in there.
Well, I mean, it was a very close vote. Do you mean it was?
Well, yeah, but either way, I'm just saying anyone who voted against it was voting against the Constitution. It's in there. Why do we need a new law on top of an old law?
Yeah, well, it's you know, basically we want Congress to actually act upon the law, but right now they are not doing that. I mean, they are not doing that, right? So,
They're abdicating their responsibility. Yes.
Just like they did with the tariffs, you know, just like, you know, they've been doing just, you know, under Speaker Johnson, they have just not been really doing anything, you know, either he's just allowing Trump to do whatever he wants, right? And
facilitating, yeah, because he put Congress on recess just a couple of weeks ago, right?
So they he keeps doing that. Yeah, every time things get too hot, he just sends them all home, right?
Go home.
And,
all right, well, keep up the peace.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I hope we can. I really hope that, I hope what you say, we can actually stop this. Ironically, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with the House vote today. Like I mentioned before, the Senate vote was very close. Let me pull up the numbers. I think it was 47 to 53 was the vote. And so basically all along party line, only two senators broke ranks. I think John Fetterman, Democrat from Pennsylvania, of course, voted with the Republicans. And Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky voted with the Democrats. And so it was 53. And so we're waiting to hear about what's going to happen with the House. And some of the different, the pace of destruction so far has been pretty extraordinary. Beyond just Khamenei, I think they've sent 20 Iranian ships, right, vessels, and the U.S. claims that the Iranian naval headquarters are in ruins. They have been, they've struck a nuclear facility, right, and I guess the combined forces of Israel and Iran have conducted about 1,600 sorties. I'm sure that cost American taxpayers a lot of money, and And then they claim to have crippled 86% of Iran's regional ballistic missile capacity. And Iran has, it's been spreading. Iran has retaliated by hitting U.S. assets and civilian infrastructure in the UAE, Qatar, and Bahrain, and direct impulse impacts, as I said, to the GCC territory there. And as you know, like at the Strait of Hormuz, I've heard it's only 30 kilometers separates it from the GCC states, and so that is the place in which Iran has been able to cut off oil that flows through there, which, as we mentioned earlier, is 20% of the oil of the world's oil supply, and so it does look like this will have a huge impact on the global economy, and as this war drags out, and as you mentioned, I think that I've heard. That some countries like Japan, I think I heard that they only have enough oil and stuff to continue going for several months, and beyond that, they could run out of oil. Correct me if that's wrong. The forces, I think I was discussing earlier the different, I don't know if it's been discussed a lot, is the asymmetric warfare going on and different military doctrines that take place here. Iran is using Shahed drones, which cost roughly between $35,000 to $50,000 each. And I don't know if you've seen pictures of them, but they can carry a lot of them around on just the back of a truck and move them around. And meanwhile, the U.S. is spending $1 million per missile, like the THAAD system, right? And basically, to shoot down one of these drones, these Shahed drones, the U.S. has to spend $1 million for a single missile, but they often have to strike more than once to get one down. So you can see how much money we would have to spend to take down these drones, right? And as you may have heard, Trump actually contacted Zelensky asking for help in doing this. And it's rather ironic that they now want help from Ukraine to help counter Iranian drones, right? This is after all the, how Trump has repeatedly sided with Putin and Zelensky, of course, the incident in the Oval Office last year and calling, Trump has called Zelensky a dictator and, attacked Ukrainian president for not wearing a suit, and of course rolling out the red carpet for Putin in Alaska. And if you saw that photo of a U.S. military person having to bend down before Putin, as he at the carpet and stuff. So now he's asking for Ukraine's help because of course Ukraine has experience in dealing with these drones. And of course, there is also the issue of that the GCC plays such an important, critical role, not only globally but also for the U.S. Economy. I think that we don't really realize that quite often. The GCC nations are major investors in U.S. tech AI companies, and if they are forced to pull their money to fund their own defense, the U.S. stock market could collapse, and I think one of our callers was asking, was it Santiago, was asking, why are we there, right? And I think a lot of us, we don't realize how tied we are to, basically we depend on people, on the world purchasing the Gulf oil in U.S. dollars to hold up the value of our currency, And of course, I had mentioned in a previous few shows that there is a coalition of governments in Asia including Russia and India, and that basically have begun to trade in China. They trade not in U.S. dollars. Like 90% of their trades between each other are not with U.S. dollars. And so this continued sidelining of the United States economically that's been going on. And this will probably add to it, honestly. So that's another aspect to it. So that's been going on. So we have this asymmetric war And we have people who are, and yeah, I mean, Trump has been bragging that we could go on forever with this. We're so powerful. We're all so all powerful. But now he's going to Zelensky begging for help, right? The irony of that cannot be overlooked. And and of course, one of the things that's come up, and you probably have seen the memes, right, is that there's been a meme to basically draft Barron Trump, draft Barron, I think it is. And I think Lawrence O'Donnell discussed this on his show. Let's play that clip.
All four of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's sons served in the American military while their father was serving as commander-in-chief, leading this country to victory in World War II. It was unthinkable then that a wartime president could have sons who would not serve in the military, like Donald Trump and his sons and daughters. Abraham Lincoln's son enlisted during the Civil War. No one expected President Lyndon Johnson's daughters to serve in the Vietnam War in the 1960s before women were allowed full participation in military service, but President Johnson's son-in-law served in Vietnam. The Trump family's flawless record of avoiding military service would be unremarkable if Donald Trump never started a war. But when your father starts a war, an illegal and unconstitutional war, and you are of the age that is eligible to fight and die in your father's war, what do you do? There is no suspense tonight about what Barron Trump will do. He will do nothing. In 2 weeks, he will have his 20th birthday party. It will surely be a lavish affair. Donald Trump has been quoted by his former White House chief of staff saying that soldiers killed in combat are suckers and losers. What does that make a soldier who wasn't in combat and is killed? What does that make a soldier who was an IT specialist, who was never supposed to be exposed to anything more dangerous than a computer screen, who got killed in action, sitting in what was the safety of his office until Donald Trump started a war? Barron Trump will not be attending Declan Cody's funeral. Barron Trump, like every member of the Trump family, has never attended the military funeral of someone that they know who was killed in action. Like Barron Trump, Declan Cody was a college student, a sophomore at Drake University, and an Army reservist from West Des Moines, Iowa. And he was one of the first American military personnel killed in Donald Trump's war.
Yeah, so that was, you just listened to Lawrence O'Donnell sort of address the issue of Barron not serving, right? And how unusual this is. And of course, we all know that Barron's father did not serve either because of his bone spurs. We have a caller. John?
Oh, hi.
Hey, welcome.
I enjoy your show, Jackie.
Oh, thank you.
It's all that Christian, gobbledygook. It's all Pete Hegseth. He has no business being. Everybody knows he has no business being the defense secretary, and that stuff never came up ever before Hegseth.
Yeah,
and I've been reading the Al Jazeera news. You know, there's a professor from Tehran University that's saying that he believes that the United States doesn't understand how the Iranian government operates. This is his observation. Another one of the articles in there is about the oil tankers that are being attacked in the Strait of Hormuz and right there off of Iran. That's not in the U.S. News, but there's a whole bunch of them. And then, what else? I would say everybody should go look at the Al Jazeera News. Mm-hmm. You can just see all Trump's lies just evaporate. You know, I mean, he's saying that they hit a second Iranian administration in that tape you rolled earlier in your show. Uh-huh. That's just a straight up lie.
Yeah, I think that it's really good to get a diverse, news and perspectives on what's going on, and definitely Al Jazeera does provide some that we don't get anywhere else as well. We're going to be playing a clip from Al Jazeera towards the end, hopefully. And definitely it's I think the extensiveness of this war, he's really playing it down. And I think, you know, I personally feel Trump's motivations don't have anything to do with Israel or evangelical Armageddon, but just trying to stop the Epstein files, to try to change what the news is talking about, you know, and he's willing to do a very short term kind of protection of his vanity in order to I really think this could spread, you know. I mean, of course, there's always Paco, you know, Trump always caves, you know, and it's just maybe he will back out of this war as quickly as he got into it, right? World War III, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if Russia would get into the war because they are benefiting from the increase in the price of oil, right? And all these.
Oh, yeah, that's another article that was on Al Jazeera. Putin is claiming that he's not sending any military help to Iran. That's running on Al Jazeera.
He was facing their economy. Russia's economy is really on its last legs, and this could be a real saving grace for them to be able to sell the oil to more parties and also for a much higher price, you know. And so it could save him, basically, you know. So it's
There's the Saudi prince that Democracy Now! Is saying, you know, reporting that the Saudi prince was calling Trump all the time and saying, hey, you know, we want you to attack Iran, but don't use the Saudi airspace. So, you know, Trump was getting played like a fiddle by not just Netanyahu. And that's oil.
Right. One of the things that is not reported a lot is the issue of water, right? These desalination plants on the Gulf are sitting targets for drone missiles from Iran, which could be launched from, you know, the mountainous regions there right along the Gulf. And it's quite easy for them to take. And, you know, these countries in the area, they really overuse water. I think Saudi Arabia, I'm looking at a map that says 883%. They use 883% more water than they have in their country, right, each year. And it's, I think, even crazier for some of the different groups. Like, I think Bahrain is like 8,000% or something like that. So they are very dependent on these desalination plants and on imports of water and food, almost entirely food, right? And it could be quite easy to cause those countries, even Saudi Arabia, a lot of stress and even political instability if the water was cut off, if the food was cut off, right? And I think Iran has, they use 72% of their water every year, so they're in a slightly better situation. But that is very high compared to other countries. I think the U.S. only uses 16% of its water it has every year, and Canada 7%. Brazil only, I think, 7.1%, very low. But in the Western Hemisphere, you know, we don't use a lot of our water. But when you're looking around the area there in North Africa and the Middle East, they use a lot. They are using more water than they have in the ground. They depend on these desalination plants and imports to survive, right?
Well, that's what they're doing in Texas too. The aquifers under Texas are going down, down, down. There's no recharge.
Yeah.
They still, they're oblivious. They just don't seem to care.
I know. I think I saw that Phoenix is discussing a desalination plant in Mexico, you know, to keep itself alive. And so it's, yeah, there are sections of the U.S. that are quite in quite a bad situation, but it is pretty bad. And I see that Egypt, I can't believe this number, they use 6,420% more of their water than they have in the country. It's just, these numbers are astounding. And for, you know, the UAE, it's 1,708%. So cutting these countries off and destroying their desalination plants will be a huge impact. And it doesn't cost around a lot of money to do that. So if the Saudi prince is asking for this, he may be asking for a lot more than he is than he thinks is going to happen, because this could be destabilizing for all of the countries in the Arab Peninsula. So
Saudi Arabia is not going to extricate the immigrants out of their country anytime.
yeah, and then people are, like, we haven't discussed, yeah, I think it's been discussed a lot in the news, but how people are stuck. Actually, I think I have an audio for that. I think I'll play that next. But yeah, that's a great point, John, to look at the other you know, what else is available to read, and definitely Al Jazeera does some really great reporting. So, yeah.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
Thank you so much. Yeah. All right, so we got, let's play this next clip, actually, about Americans being stranded in the Middle East.
We can't help you. It's the message, it's loud and clear. We just got this message here in Israel from the embassy. It reads, I'm quoting here, the U.S. Embassy is not in a position at this time to evacuate or directly assist Americans in departing Israel. Those are the words from the Ambassador Mike Huckabee, and frankly, they're consistent with what Americans are hearing across this region. You know, we all were alerted in 14 countries last night to leave immediately. People were told on their own using commercial options, which is simply an incredible irony, given that in almost all of the countries listed, there are no commercial options to leave right now. And in fact, in six of them, there isn't even a confirmed sitting U.S. ambassador, including in Saudi Arabia, where the massively fortified embassy has been hit. It's a stunning situation. I was struck by the words of a general who's currently stuck in Dubai. He formerly commanded the base in Kuwait, such an important base. I've been through there on my way to Afghanistan to report a story. And he was simply shocked by the situation, saying,
it's a little bit disheartening and a little bit envious to hear that the BBC has announced that the UK government is actually arranging transport for the British citizens to be able to extract them, whereas here for us as Americans, we feel abandoned. The State Departments, I've talked to two embassy personnel, two different embassies. They are in survival mode, quite frankly, because as we know, the administration reduced their budgets by almost one half.
His words are sobering.
So that was CNN's Aaron Burnett reporting on Americans who are in Israel having very limited options to leave the country. And also a former U.S. ambassador, actually discussing, I don't know if you saw Mike Huckabee's very crazy statement that he made. He is a U.S. ambassador there in Israel. He is an evangelical and definitely, I would say, believes in Armageddon and the need to bring Jesus Christ back through rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem. So he wrote on X that U.S. Embassy was not in a position at this time to evacuate or directly assist Americans in departing Israel. And, of course, there are many other countries, Gulf states, where folks are trapped, right? I heard that in Dubai, like, people were spending $250,000 to get a plane out and things like that. These are, of course, very wealthy people. These countries like Dubai, they're going to survive this, actually, because their whole shtick is that you can go there in a completely safe environment with no taxes and just live this great life. You know, of course, they're trying to attract wealthy people, and they have attracted wealthy people. And of course, the promise of the U.S. is militarily protecting them, right? And the U.S.'s system of protection is really rather dated. I mean, we still are sort of thinking in terms of the Cold War, these massive expensive defense systems that you don't generally have to use very often. It's more for posturing, right, for the, you know, mutually assured destruction. It is not for the war of today, right? I mean, this is why Trump is asking Zelensky for help in fighting this war, because it's a war about drones. And it is also a war about AI. So let's play that piece about, I'm going to skip the CNN poll. You know, 6 in 10 Americans are disapproving of a U.S. decision. I'll look more at that next week. So let's play the how the U.S. hit Iran with banned AI.
A day before the U.S. and Israel launched an attack on Iran on February 28th, the Pentagon blacklisted Anthropic, one of America's biggest AI companies. But here's the twist. Turns out it had reportedly used Anthropic's AI model Claude to help with its military operation in Iran anyway. This includes intelligence assessment and simulating battle scenarios. The Pentagon's blacklisting of Anthropic was the culmination of a months-long dispute over how AI should be used in warfare and who controls it. The U.S. Department of Defense had been threatening to blacklist Anthropic unless it removed Claude's guardrails for military use. It gave the AI company a deadline of February 27th to do so. While Anthropic had been fine to work with the military in general, it had two non-negotiable red lines. One, no to mass surveillance of Americans, and two, no to fully autonomous weapons without human input, as the technology is still prone to errors. When the Pentagon's deadline came, Anthropic refused to remove those guardrails. The next day, the US government said it would designate Anthropic a supply chain risk. This means anyone who wants to do business with the US military has to cut ties with Anthropic. Usually, this type of designation happens to foreign companies, not Silicon Valley startups. The timing of the deadline and the following US strike on Iran led many to speculate whether this was more than a coincidence. On the surface, the Pentagon may have publicly denounced Anthropic, but the reality of switching to a new AI system is messy, since Claude is deeply embedded in its classified network. This whole dispute raises questions over who should control AI in the military. Should a private company have a say in how its technology is used in warfare? Or does the national security of a government override that once a contract is signed? Last July, when Anthropic signed a $200 million contract with the Pentagon, it kept these safety guardrails. But tension between the two escalated in January. Reports surfaced that the US had used Claude in its operation to abduct Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, although it's unclear how. Anthropic raised concerns with the Pentagon over how its technology was used. This led US officials to ask for unrestricted access to Claude for military purposes, which Anthropic refused. OpenAI has stepped in and struck a deal with the Pentagon. But this is more than just corporate bickering. By sidelining an AI company that had some safety conditions, the US government is saying speed is more important than accuracy. This is a sentiment previously echoed by Pete Hegseth, the US Secretary of War. For now, the Pentagon appears dependent on the very same technology it publicly denounced. But once Anthropic is gone, what role will AI play in the US military and under what rules? While we don't fully know the answers to these questions, we do know that the company which asked them has been shown the door.
From Al Jazeera, and that's Al Jazeera's Lynn Young-Gillen, she's explaining the dispute between the Pentagon and Anthropic, which is the company that, of course, Trump had blacklisted last week. And I think they had last Friday was the deadline where all these U.S. Departments had to stop using Anthropic. And, of course, on Saturday, they launched a war and used Anthropic's AI quad to basically... in its military operation in Iran, and of course Trump and Pete Hegseth, of course the Secretary of Defense, had thrown a huge fit because Anthropic refused to allow them to basically to get rid of these safety guardrails, right? They were trying, Anthropic has some red lines where they will not cross, no mass surveillance and no fully autonomous weapons. And the Pentagon wanted them to lift that. And so Trump on Friday, last Friday, had designated Anthropic a supply chain risk and ordered a 6-month phase out. But of course, just hours later, the Pentagon used cloud to bomb Iran. The Wall Street Journal reported that Claude was the, quote, engine behind intelligence assessments and target identification during Saturday strikes. And so, and even that they report that on the first day alone, Claude reportedly generated 1,000 prioritized targets. And so here you have the president blacklisting a tool, but the military, of course, is so deeply baked with it that they can't unplug it, right? And so, but yeah, this is a really interesting point. We're almost down to the last few minutes. I don't know if any callers out there want to call in. I don't know if we the number here, of course, is 503-231-8187. How do you feel about this? It's such a, I think next week it'll take a, well, we'll see what happens next week. You never know. There might be an entirely new thing happening next week, as we've seen in the past week. But yeah, the impacts will be continue to be seen. And we see both Hezbollah and Houthi forces are engaged in the Iran war. And yeah, this could be, this is a very destabilizing thing. So, and we do see that Iran's remaining missile units have bypassed the Aegis and Patriot systems and processing plants in Saudi Arabia and Dubai have been hit. This is very, very concerning. And so thank you so much. You've been listening to KBU Portland, and I'm Jacqueline Keeler, and this has been E Pluribus Unum. And I can't say that I found a way that we could unify around this other than to recognize that just how insane the people are who have taken over our government and the military that we fund. I'm not going to call it my military. And so, yeah, so please continue to stay true to power and stay safe and skeptical and loud, I think would be a good thing. This has been Jacqueline Keeler. Thank you so much.
I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements.